You're listening to the FQXI podcast. Ah, light, the ultimate source of all our energy. Which brings us to our last item about photosynthesis, the process through which plants convert light to energy. Reporter Karin Pikama met up with quantum physicist Alex Chin at the University of Cambridge in the UK, who described growing evidence that photosynthesis may have quantum roots. Quantum roots? That's funny.
So my name is Dr. Alex Chin. I'm a Winton Advanced Research Fellow at the University of Cambridge. And for the last few years, I've been working on the quantum mechanics that may be involved in photosynthesis.
Chin is one of a group of researchers working on the frontiers of the emerging field called quantum biology. Quantum biology investigates exotic quantum properties in biological systems. One of the most promising areas in this field of research is photosynthesis. This is the process that helps green plants, algae, and even certain bacteria to grow. Through a chemical reaction evoked by sunlight, carbon dioxide and water are transformed into plant material. This process is incredibly efficient and doesn't cost the plant a huge amount of energy. In 2007, Greg Engels and his colleagues in the research group of Graham Fleming at the University of California, Berkeley, first showed that photosynthesis might actually depend on the quantum property of superposition. This is the idea that particles can be in more than one place, or indeed in more than one state at the same time. Since this discovery, several other research groups have become interested in the potential quantum mechanical properties of photosynthesis. But most of the research in this area to date has focused on proving that photosynthesis is indeed making clever use of superposition. Chin and his collaborators across Europe have now actually started thinking about how plants are achieving these quantum states. But before we delve into how plants perform quantum mechanics, let's take a closer look at the two processes at work in photosynthesis.
There are the light reactions, which is the part where solar energy is captured, converted into essentially sort of molecular excitations, and then used to produce electrons. And then there are sort of the dark reactions where those sort of electrons go on to participate in sort of chemistry, drive a sort of synthetic chemistry that ultimately fixes carbon. All of the recent work and the interest that sort of be properly put into the category of quantum biology, well, looks at the light reactions. So all of the things that happen when photons are absorbed, typically in molecules like chlorophyll, they tend to sort of excite electrons in those molecules. So the molecules are sort of excited, that they actually have a sort of different electronic configuration. And that configuration can be sort of passed around from molecule to molecule, typically through what are known as pigment protein complexes, down to another type of structure called a reaction center, where that energy is used to release an electron. And that process, particularly under conditions of low light intensity, can be extremely efficient. Often for one photon absorbed, an electron almost always comes out. It's close to 100% efficient in that sense.
So even in the deepest corners of our oceans, where sunlight is scarce, algae still manage to perform photosynthesis. But quite how this amazing sensitivity is actually achieved, for a long time remained hidden behind our technological limitations. That's because, while my or Chin's explanation of photosynthesis may take some time, the process itself is quite astonishingly rapid. It takes place in the pico and femtoseconds. That's a millionth of 1 billionth of a second. And up until recently, we had simply no means of observing events over such a brief period of time.
What challenged our idea about that sort of process was the development of extremely fast and very precise optics that could really start to probe in detail what was really happening on these very, very fast timescales. So as I said, femtoseconds, picoseconds, and particularly in some of the structures from the green sulfur bacteria, that was the first example of where we were able to really sort of see this energy transfer following light absorption. And when people were able to then actually sort of zone in on what was happening in these very tiny time windows, they saw that actually energy doesn't really just sort of like hop from molecule to molecule. It actually spreads in what we would call a coherence or a wave-like manner, so evolving according to the laws of quantum mechanics.
The super-fast lasers the researchers used allowed them to spot a periodic or oscillatory pattern in the travelling energy. The oscillations, or quantum beats, are the signature of quantum coherence.
Under this wave-like evolution, it's really the way energy moves. It's not localized on any particular molecule, moving from molecule to molecule, but delocalized over many molecules. And according to the laws of quantum mechanics, it essentially explores all the different pathways simultaneously before alighting on the center. And that's thought still in some sense a conjecture, but there seems to be mounting evidence for it, to be an important way in which, or an important mechanism by which energy is delivered quickly and efficiently towards the reaction center.
Thus, photosynthesis established itself as a potentially quantum process. This was surprising, as until recently it seemed extremely unlikely that quantum properties would be found in nature. So far, scientists' best results in creating quantum states artificially have been achieved with temperatures that we normally only see in deep space. One of the main reasons that physicists try to do this is to eventually build a quantum computer, a device that in theory could carry out certain tasks far faster than any existing computer.
There's a great deal of interest in harnessing quantum effects for technological purposes. I mean, or most famously, the quantum computer. You know, a great challenge there is actually trying to ensure that quantum effects survive long enough that we're able to do useful things with them. And so for me personally, one of the most interesting things here was the idea that there's something going on in these molecules that actually allows these quantum effects to last over the typical time periods where it's actually doing something useful. There is a certain type of management or architecture in these structures which actually allows those effects to persist on longer timescales than we might expect. And that might provide some conceptual ideas or design principles.
So the fascinating question is now how it is possible that in the messy environment in which plants operate, these quantum states can exist and even persist for long enough to be useful.
The important thing is understanding how the particles carrying the energy, which are called excitons in this case, interact with their environment, which in these systems are the molecules that support these excitons and the proteins that surround them. Now, the proteins around them are in sort of constant thermal motion. They constitute a type of noise which will disrupt coherence of energy. And that was ultimately thought to be the reason why we wouldn't expect there to be much coherence in these things, particularly at room temperature where they're really jiggling around like crazy. However, what we became interested in was the idea that there can actually be particular types of vibration in these complexes, which are very strongly connected or coupled to the exciton motion, which rather than destroy exciton coherence, they can actually preserve or even generate it. And essentially what can happen is that the excitons move through this system as waves, and vibrations are types of wave themselves. So some of the wave-like character from the excitons can be transferred out into these very particular vibrations. But because these vibrations are less subject to the sort of random noise that's everywhere, they can transfer that coherence back into the excitons at a later time and effectively prolong the coherence lifetime of those excitons against this very noisy background. And that seemed to, once we built that into our model and put that into our simulations, turned out a set of typical times in which the excitons behave like waves, which was consistent with the experimental results. So there's a very, very intricate set of interactions between the exciton and its environment that actually allows these quantum effects to last longer than we might think otherwise.
This new model, which was published in Nature Physics at the start of 2013, gives a tantalizing explanation for how photosynthesis might be quantum. Although there is still a lot to be explored, Chin's research may turn out to be an important step towards our ability to harnessing exotic quantum principles. Ultimately, the more we can learn about how nature manages its quantum mechanical tricks, the closer technological dreams such as quantum computing might come to reality. And Chin thinks that quantum biology may end up having a much wider reach.
There is great interest in this field, and I think that will encourage people to look further and deeper into other types of biological process. A little closer scrutiny might well actually turn up more quantum effects.
Thank you to Alex Chin, who is speaking to Corinne Pikema. I'm glad we've moved fully away from the doom and gloom set up in the earlier part of the podcast, with all that talk about meteor impacts.
Although, I did read a terrifying physics paper that suggested that following a meteor shower, certain giant plants can develop intelligence and will roam around blinding and killing people.
Oh, yeah.
And even feeding off them.
That wasn't a physics paper. That was John Wyndham's post-apocalyptic novel, The Day of the Triffids. Or else it was an episode of Doctor Who.
I think you might be right now that you mention it. Anyway, there's more information about quantum biology in an article on the website, www.fqxi.org/community. And you can hear interviews about how quantum effects could help birds navigate and explain the mechanism behind our sense of smell on previous podcasts, which you can find on the podcast page, www.fqxi.org/community/podcast.